you're listening to LA Miracle Cure, and we're here, can you believe it, in Los Angeles, California. And I'm your host, Barbara. You know, we come to you weekly with all things cannabis. Now, today is a very special day because I have a friend calling in today to give us information about what's going on in my, I don't even know how to say it, but I used to live in Canada, in Vancouver, BC. So I love all things Canadian. And so I have one of my favorite activists that is working on cannabis legislation in Canada. And I want to welcome Alan Wewak. Welcome, Alan, to LA Miracle Cure.
Thank you so much for having me, Barbara, and Canada loves you back.
Thank you so much for saying that. I just wanted to say, first off, we are sharing this wonderful continent of the Americas, but there is a real different split in how Canadians view cannabis and how Americans view cannabis. So could you tell us in a minute or less, where do you see this split?
Well, I don't think we see it that differently in some ways. I think we've just chosen different paths to try to address the issues associated with cannabis. And we've recognized that prohibition hasn't worked. 20% of our population is consuming cannabis on a daily, weekly, or bi-monthly basis. So simply put, prohibition for 96 years has failed. And we've decided through policy and legislation to align our federal and provincial laws to better regulate, control, and harness the power of cannabis. And that's exactly what Canada is doing. And eventually, I think America is going to get there too.
So meaning that cannabis, because that's what we've all heard here in the United States, is legal across all states in Canada. Is that true?
Well, we don't have states. Every province... Our federal law with Bill C-45, which received what we call royal assent last Thursday, and we're hopeful the regulations under that legislation will come out very soon, and will come into force on the ground on October 17th. So right now, the only legal cannabis in Canada that you can acquire is medicinal cannabis through a licensed producer. Come October 17th, you'll be able to go into a legal cannabis store owned by a provincial government or a private retailer selling legal, safely produced cannabis.
Now, I just have a question. Because I heard you say something that piqued my interest. You said a government providing a store. Can you elaborate a little bit on what that would look like?
Canada is a little different than America. We share values, we share beliefs, but America is based on the First Amendment. We're based on peace, order, and good government. And one of the ways we provide that to our citizens and collectively what we've decided to do is in many cases, government agencies, or what we call crown agencies, act as distributors of alcohol in this country. So in Ontario, our largest province with about 14 million people, just north of New York State, all alcohol, with the exception of beer, is sold through LCBO stores, which is the Liquor Control Board of Ontario. And we're going to sell cannabis the exact same way. A crown agency, a subsidiary, has been established of the called the Ontario Cannabis Store. And it will be that government agency, which will be a third party, which will generate revenue to fund hospitals, roads, schools. And they're going to do so by selling cannabis to adults who choose to consume legally.
Wow, that's amazing. Now, in my thought, I know that everyone out there listening to LA Miracle Cure knows that I'm pretty much a novice. I don't know a lot about this. But what I'd like to know from you is, do you trust your government to do this in a way that it would be fair and equitable to all? And what happens to the cannabis business for the small entrepreneur? Because in America, we are interested in the entrepreneur being able to benefit and being able to have their stake in the claim, because they're the ones that have brought medicinal cannabis to the forefront in the beginning. And then we want to be able to do that without big business coming in and taking over.
Well, there's a role, and Canada has designed this system to try to leave room for everybody. Under C-45, we have allowances for what we call micro cultivators. So there's nothing more Canadian than hockey. So think of a hockey rink, and about a quarter of a hockey rink. Anybody can, in a looser security regime and a looser application regime, when C-45 comes into effect, can become a micro cultivator and sell into one of the larger companies. We also, in many provinces, do have private retail. So in each version of our states, we have a different retail model. And, you know, there's some really interesting opportunities for investors and small business people to get in on that side of the business as well. In fact, in Saskatchewan, one of our western provinces, one of the youngest Canadians to win a retail cannabis license came to be. She's only 23 years old, and she's going to have a rocking business and build a great company for the rest of her life. And we're thrilled to support her and empower those voices.
Wow, that's amazing. A 23-year-old. We see the same thing in the United States. I mean, I can only really speak to Los Angeles because L.A. is really where L.A. Miracle Cure was born, out of just watching some of the pioneers, groundbreakers, and gatekeepers of cannabis move forward, changing the identity, asking for social justice, asking for opportunities to do good business and to serve patients. I mean, this is what Americans voted for. It was presented in a method where people who have AIDS, people who have various medical maladies could find relief in using cannabis medicinally. And so in 1995, we did our voting, and in our propositions in our state, it became legal for medicinal cannabis to be provided through shops, but they went under persecution by the federal government. So I'm sure you know the story. Tell us a little bit about the business that you're in as a legislator. We call them lobbyists or legislators, organizations who organize a PAC to go to the government and make change in laws. Tell us about your organization, the name of it, and what role you play.
The Cannabis Council of Canada is a trade association. I don't consider myself a lobbyist, but I have spent a lot of my time in politics historically. We exist to support our members in shaping common positions, advancing policy, serving our patients, making sure our medical patients' voice is never lost in this process, and really educating our members and adapting to a very different world, which is a world of legal cannabis for adult consumer use, which is going to happen in Canada on October 17th.
Mm-hmm. And so when you mean recreational or adult use, you're talking about people who want to use it over 21, correct?
Well, our alcohol laws are different. And so the minimum age established by the federal government was 18 for cannabis consumption. But each province operates a little differently. For example, the legal age to consume alcohol in my home province, in Ontario, Canada's largest province, is 19. And so the same rules will apply for cannabis for recreational purposes. But what's so unique about Canada is we're preserving our medical system while also allowing for and recognizing prohibition has failed, so also legalizing adult recreational use of cannabis. We want to keep profits away from organized crime. We want to keep recreational cannabis away from kids. And we think this is the best way to do it.
Well, you know, there are so many different nuances with this. Alan, I just thank you for making time, first of all, to speak to the United States, to speak to America, the USA, and to kind of give us an understanding. So let's go back a little bit and let's answer a few questions. Okay, Canada is a large country. So just off the top of your head, how many people do you think you have in Canada and how many provinces are there?
Well, there's 10 provinces and 3 territories. We have a population of approximately 37 million people, a little north of that. And, you know, as I said, the figures are a little variable, but we think that 20%, based on our data, of the Canadian population is consuming cannabis on a daily, bi-weekly, or monthly basis. And that's a lot of people.
Yes, it is.
That's over 7 million people.
Well, now in California, let's just go to California. We're comparing a little bit. In California, our last vote was 8 million people. 8 million people voted to have recreational cannabis available or adult use, which passed. And then as of January 1st, it was over 21 could use consumption. But it is by city that the law, so you can actually have, you could be in, let's say, a California city like Los Angeles, which is comprised of 88 cities, and you could drive into a smaller city, and it's not legal. So would there be like hiccups like that? Because let's say you have Whistler, which I'm very familiar with. I used to frequent Whistler. Let's say you have Whistler where a lot of tourists go. Would that be a place where people could bring their wares, or would they have to purchase it there? How does that work?
Well, the big difference between the way Canada is approaching ending prohibition and where U.S. states approached it was we decided from a national level. So I don't want to make this a competition, but you had 8 million people vote. We had the entirety of this country vote. When our prime minister was elected, Justin Trudeau, one of the central promises the Liberal Party of Canada, his political party, made to Canadians, one that Canadians voted for and elected a majority government on, was the legalization of cannabis, not just for medicinal use, which was already imposed upon our government by the courts, but instead to find a better way to reduce harm from cannabis. And the God's honest truth, the biggest harm associated with cannabis is its prohibition.
Now, I would agree with you, because it's an indiscriminate way of putting people in jail in the United States. This is what we found, that people who practice or people are who are part of the culture when it was known as marijuana are jailed, given long-term jail. There's a lot of problems that we have had with cartels and with people that are selling without license, underworld or underground or a black market, if you will. Those are all the cute ways of putting making a lot of money off of marijuana. Marijuana, prior to becoming known as cannabis, actually was the number one crop in California. It was our cash crop. Nobody talked about it, but it was the reason why California is the sixth largest economy in the world outside of the U.S. So we are very aware of how cannabis is now influencing government, influencing public opinion, but our vote is state by state, and our vote does not encompass the entire United States. So in the United States, it is federally unrecognized, and people can still stand under prosecution under the federal government. And so we have like two different arms of government: the state government, which says it's permitted, you have to pay taxes, you have to do this, that, and the other, and you have to follow under a certain construct, which is still being made, mind you. But people are much more happier and feel connected as a community, even though there's no public consumption. So my question for you, Alan, is how are you guys handling public consumption?
That is variable, and that's being addressed by provinces. But in general, what we're doing is we're treating cannabis, and while I want to be very clear, the risk of harm is not to the same degree. We're treating cannabis in many ways like we treat alcohol. We're trying to better regulate its use and control so that you will be allowed to consume cannabis in your home. Each province is taking a different approach in terms of vape lounges and public consumption. But at the end of the day, the core of this policy is a recognition that prohibition has failed. And we need to bring this out of the shadows and into the light. Many in our community, in the gray market in cannabis, the dispensaries and these elements who have helped drive this policy forward, we're going to need to change, because sometimes, not in all cases, but sometimes there's someone of lower character in the supply chain in the illegal system, whether that's organized crime of some way, shape, or form. And Canada simply has decided, and we have decided as a people, that we're not going to cross-subsidize organized crime with cannabis. We're not going to cross-subsidize human trafficking with cannabis. We're going to channel it. We're going to allow everyone to participate who should. And we're going to make sure that the profits made from this are used to make our country and our communities better while keeping youth away from cannabis, just like we do with alcohol.
Mm-hmm. I love the way you put that, keeping youth away. So a lot of times, you know, we've always seen marijuana, and I always go back to that because it has two personalities. I can see this clearly. So when we think about marijuana, we think about the fact that it is, we've always been told that it was a gateway drug, the gateway drug to send you into this abyss of illicit drug use and habits and free sex for all. And, you know, it was just had a bad rap. We never really talked about the medicinal value. We never really talked about how it could be edifying. We never really even got into the fact that possibly it could be used for people who have religious purposes or people who are interested in moving forward in other areas. We never really thought about this. Cannabis seems to fall in so many different categories. I know that for you in Canada, what we are missing in our laws here is we don't have any recognizable testing. We don't have any clinical trials. We don't have a lot of studies that we recognize that support the medicinal use of cannabis in the United States. Canada is way ahead of us in that particular area because of the way you have looked at it for so long. A matter of fact,
forgive me, Barbara. I was just going to say, you know, as much as I have a nationalistic bent and as much as I love to showcase Canada, we're still struggling with that too. And this is a symptom of 96 or 100 years of prohibition in some cases. Mm-hmm. Doctors in the medical community have chosen, not of their own volition, but they've been pushed away from studying the complexity that is cannabis. Mm-hmm. It's hard to patent it, stick a label on it, and sell it and be profitable. And the large pharma companies that do good work, that generally operate in this space, couldn't make any money off of it. And the governments were looking desperately for negative causation as opposed to the health benefits. So we need to develop more knowledge, and it's going to take more time. Canada will be part of that. America will be part of it. We're going to do it together, but it's going to take some time to get the clinical data we need. What we know today is that cannabis, even for combustion, is not listed by IARC or the World Health Organization as a class one carcinogen. We know that there are lower rates of addiction and incidence of addiction with cannabis than tobacco or alcohol. Now, what we also know is cannabis is not completely harm-free. And the Canadian industry, Cannabis Council of Canada, will not say that it is. It is less harmful than other intoxicants. It has a lot of value beyond the medicinal or even recreational benefits of it. But it has to be treated with respect, just like any other intoxicant. And that's why we don't want youth accessing it, unless it's for medicinal reasons.
Well, I tell you, I couldn't have said it better. But I will say this, that right now we're going to take a station break. I just really appreciate you being here, Alan. And you're listening to LA Miracle Cure. And we're going to be right back with Alan Wewak. Am I saying your last name correct?
You can say whatever you want as long as you don't call me late for dinner.
I certainly appreciate that. All right, listen, we'll be right back with LA Miracle Cure, and we're talking to someone who is giving us the ins and outs in Canada.
Well, the Out Loud perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life. On AmericaOutloud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
And we're back. You're listening to LA Miracle Cure. I'm your host, Barbara. And we're talking all things Canada today and how that relates to cannabis. I have with me a very special guest. I have Alan Wewak with us, and he is with, tell us the name of your organization again.
We are the Cannabis Council of Canada, the trade association for licensed producers of cannabis under our medical system, the ACPMR, and very soon under C-45, the Cannabis Act, adult consumer use.
Well, we love that. And, you know, we do have gatekeepers, we have heroes, we have people that are right at the forefront here in California, specifically in Los Angeles, that have been on LA Miracle Cure here at our home, America Out Loud. If you guys want to take a look at our website, LA Miracle Cure, or if you want to go and look at our section here at America Out Loud, you can see all the wonderful shows that we had in season one. This is season two, and now we're talking about the ins and outs of cannabis in Canada. And here in Los Angeles, it's pretty clear that there's a dispensary that's allowed definitively to distribute cannabis to people who have a medical rec license, and that's been going on. And then if you're over 21 and you can show your ID, then you can go to the same licensed dispensary, and it's, by the way, licensed by the City of Los Angeles, the County of Los Angeles, and then the State of California. Is your dispensary, let's say, in where you live, are they the same? Are they licensed by the province and then on? Or how does licensing work?
It's really a big misconception in Canada. A lot of folks will look at medicinal cannabis and they think dispensaries are legal in Canada, and they're not. The only way to legally acquire medicinal cannabis in this country, in Canada, today, is through a licensed producer. These are the companies that are actually cultivating and growing cannabis in places like Smith Falls or Kincardine or New Liskeard or Brantford. And through a medical professional, you can get access to cannabis through these licensed producers who ship it to your home via mail. That's the only legal way to acquire cannabis today. Once C-45, the Cannabis Act, comes into force and is effective on the ground, which will be October 17th, according to the Prime Minister, then you'll be able to go into a legal cannabis store that is licensed by the province, in many cases owned by the province, and purchase cannabis if you're above the age of majority, so 19 in Ontario. You'll also be able to, for adult consumer use, purchase cannabis online from that same store. But most of our crown agencies and retail partners have decided that the bricks and mortar experience of interacting with the bud tender is important, and that's how our system is set up. And every province is treating it a little differently. Some are doing what we call crown models, where the government owns the store. It's the government selling you cannabis through a government agency. Or at West, in places like Alberta, you'll have a hybrid system where the government is acting as the wholesaler and distributor. And then there's private stores owned by individuals and community members that will be the quote-unquote dispensaries. But a lot of the dispensaries that you see operating today in the gray market will, in some cases, unfortunately, have to shut down.
Okay, so now my question is, I am a good faith citizen. I love Canada. I want to use my backyard and make brownies and provide them to the government. What type of micro laws would allow me to do that as a Canadian citizen?
Forgive me, Barbara, I lost you there for a moment, so I'm sorry I interrupted. Edibles are the next tranche for us. And so under C-45, if you as a citizen want to grow your own medicine as a medicinal patient, or if you want to grow for adult consumer use, C-45 allows for four plants to a certain height threshold that anyone can grow in their home or their backyard. Larger scale commercial cultivation will require licensure. Now, for a micro license for that quarter of a hockey rink, that's done through what we call Health Canada, which is our Ministry of Health federally. And that's the same process for larger commercial operations. You'll have to apply through Health Canada. And there are 109 licensed cultivation sites in Canada today, and that's growing. When I got involved in this business, it was under 30. Now we're up to 109.
And how long have you been working behind the scenes, putting this legislation and working for cannabis? How long have you been involved?
I would love to take credit for this, but honestly, this began with a court decision. But really, the folks who made this happen were the activists generated the choice, Canadians generated the choice, but it was Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and the Liberal Party of Canada that put this to the people of this country in a general election. And it was a commitment to better regulate cannabis, and Canadians elected what we call a majority government. So we elected enough Liberal MPs to make sure that this happened, and the will of Canadians has been listened to, and we're doing it. Well, as of October 17th, we will be the first G7 country, first modern developed economy, to fully lift prohibition on cannabis.
Wow, that's amazing. Okay, so does that mean everybody who is incarcerated now? I assume if you're in offense of the current laws, that would you get a ticket or do you go to jail? And if you are in jail, are you going to be released? How does that work?
Generally, we do not, and I want to say this with the utmost respect, because I'm a Canadian, but I grew up and I still hold this immense esteem for the United States, for the ideals upon which the country was founded and the great character of the American people. That being said, we generally have taken a very different approach towards our correctional system than the United States is. For small amounts of cannabis, you generally do not see Canadians going to jail. You haven't seen that for a very long time. Simple possession, you'll get a ticket. You generally will get a warning. If you're a young person, the police will scare the bejesus out of you to try to, you know, inspire some correct life decisions. But we don't have a 3-strikes law. Now, if you were operating on multi-ton deals involving organized crime, you won't be let out of jail, and you probably shouldn't be. Because if you're doing that as part of an organized crime network, not a small individual helping someone else for medicine, that leads to a lot of other social harms that we're trying to avoid. However, despite Canada being a progressive country and a positive country and taking a very different attitude towards incarceration than you folks have done, and I say that with the utmost respect, we still live in a racialized society. And First Nations, Indigenous youth, people of color, have been unfortunately charged with criminal charges related to cannabis to a much greater extent than white Anglo-Saxon Canadians. And Bill Blair, one of our MPs and the point person for the Prime Minister on this file, has said that as C-45 comes into force, the government will be looking, and we don't yet have the details, on amnesty and forgiveness for charges of simple possession, which is the appropriate and right thing to do.
You know, I love the word you say. Here we call it social justice, or the social justice piece. And there are various people. There are some people that agree with it. There are some people that are silenced by it. There are some people that are inconvenienced by it. But there are people that are still incarcerated on it. And the key word that I like that you said was amnesty. Amnesty means forgive and forget, and you are now back on square one. And we in the United States haven't got to that yet. And that is really probably where we need to be, because cannabis is courting a lot of new friends, and cannabis is the new frontier. And we plan to make $15 billion in Los Angeles in the next 365 days of doing business. What is the projection?
Isn't that better to be spent on hospitals, roads, addiction programming, support for our veterans, rather than allowing that to exist in a legal marketplace and in many cases cross-subsidize organized crime that's selling heroin and cocaine and killing people and trafficking women?
Absolutely.
And it's that an insane policy.
And that is exactly what it is. And right now, you know, we are America, United States, in over 200 cities, we are under the rule of various cartels. And they supply the methamphetamine, the heroin, the cocaine. And it's become such a big problem that the citizens are not safe. People that are not in the underworld don't understand it, but people in the inner cities do understand it. And absolutely, taking medical marijuana back, taking cannabis back for recreational use or adult use is what they like to say here, actually stops all of that. I'm not ready for my government to sell it to me, though. I'm not sure how I feel about that. Tell me, how do you feel about the government knowing and having a record of your consumption use, how much money you're spending on it? Let me just say this. Here in
the United States. Not in our system.
Okay. Well, let me just give you
They'll do market. Forgive me, Barbara. I get excited because this is such an engaging and wonderful topic, and I love hearing the American experience versus the Canadian experience.
So absolutely.
Forgive my enthusiasm.
Let me just say this. Here in the United States, let's say you want to have a refinance on your home. Let's say that you have been living in your home and anyway, so you have to turn in your bank records or you have to show your spending habits to court a certain lender. Let's say that in this transaction of working with your paperwork, they are able to ascertain that you're a gambler. In the United States, more than likely, you won't get a refi on your property because they can say, well, look, this is your habit. If you are shopping with the government in Canada, how is that negatively going to impact an individual because there's a record?
Well, it should. There will be no traceable limit other than if someone's looking at their bank records, which I can't imagine they would be looking at day-to-day transactions. It'd be no different than buying a bottle of wine. Remember, the big difference is this is federally legal for adult consumer use as of October 17th. So in Canada, you're not doing anything wrong. It's the same as someone buying a bottle of wine or a case of beer. If you're buying multiple tons of cannabis, it's probably an indication of a deeper issue. But let's be frank here. That's not going to happen. We're going to have people purchasing for personal consumption just like they would a bottle of wine with friends or a case of beer on a weekend. It's normal. It's adult. And it's happening today. We're just choosing to regulate it better.
Now, I can remember when I was living in Canada, Vancouver, BC, loved it. I can remember.
Gorgeous part of the country.
Absolutely. I can remember that there was some tax that I had to pay. Was it a sin tax that I had to pay for alcohol and cigarettes? Will that carry over onto a cannabis, and how does that work?
It will, and it's actually something we're not opposed to. So to cannabis, there will be applied for recreational purposes an excise tax. And this is a sin tax, just like we would apply it to tobacco or alcohol. And it really goes back to fund the management of the program. And it's a way for us to invest back in our communities, not just directly, but through our government as well. So that's something we support. Unfortunately, our government is not perfect. And while they've made a lot of good calls on cannabis, and we're very grateful for their work, they have made some mistakes. And one of the mistakes the government made that we're going to have to work through is they actually applied that same sin tax to medicinal cannabis as well. And because cannabis does not have what we call a DIN number, our court decision in our medicinal system only allows for access. It doesn't specifically allow for reimbursement like it would in a drug in a private insurance plan. So that's something we've got to work through. And the government did allow for an exemption on high CBD, very low THC cannabis products that are medicinal, where they would be excise-free, but the limits were too low. They proposed and accepted a 0.3% THC limit, and we know that THC has some very proven and solid medicinal benefits, and while I could understand them putting a threshold in, the threshold they chose was too low, and we'll work with them, and we'll try together to make sure that the voices of patients are heard and make sure that the medicinal system is gated so that it's only accessed by true medical patients and adult consumer users are paying their fair share, which we're proud to do.
So now let me go back to that, because we know that studies have shown that the THC matched by the CBD together at the same time is what actually works best in medicinal fighting of pain and of people who are arthritic or dealing with chronic issues, even in drug intervention. We in the United States have a horrific problem with painkillers. Let's do a sidebar.
We have it here too, sadly.
Let's do a sidebar right quick. And can we talk about opiates? Is that possible? Are you having the same issue with opiates flooding the markets in Canada?
Yep, and we're seeing fentanyl being laced into illicit hard drugs. It's a tragedy. Opioids are an epidemic, and they're appalling to see how they destroy people. And sadly, the way they were prescribed, tax-free, and given by doctors legitimized them. And we've seen a wave of addictions. And while cannabis is not a solution, cannabis is part of a solution to the opioid epidemic. We've seen, and this is anecdotal, it's not a full clinical trial because we simply don't have the time yet to really compile this data, but I think it's a clear picture. Our veterans, so members of the Canadian forces who fought side by side in Afghanistan with Americans who have served around the world in both world wars with you guys, these are folks who have seen some nasty things in places like Afghanistan and other parts of the world. Many of them are suffering post-traumatic stress disorder. And many were prescribed opioids in dealing with them. Now, as medicinal cannabis has become more normalized, as more veterans have consumed it, what we have seen is a significant decline in people choosing opioids or benzoates or these types of addictive, harmful products, and instead utilizing medicinal cannabis to deal with the strain and the challenges they're facing. And this is true of other medicinal disorders as well that are not linked to stress or environment. We've seen it with chemo. We've seen it with cancer. We've seen it with other illnesses. I won't name him, but one of my close friends just had a major spinal surgery, and they put him on opioids, and they also put him on cannabis, and he's off the opioids and only using cannabis because he saw the signs of addiction forming.
Wow. You know, my heart goes out to your friend, and of course, we respect all those Canadian soldiers and, of course, our U.S. veterans. Because we do see the issues. They are the finest among us because they did sacrifice and try to, you know, be peacekeepers in the world. And unfortunately, what has happened is when they come back, particularly here in the United States, yes, they've been given these things that are addictive, but there's no cognitive therapy that goes along with it. No behavioral therapy to help them get over this. Just pills and go home. And then they're men, and men sometimes tend not to want to communicate when it's difficult. So, you know, we're working toward getting more communication. And I think that's one of the major things that we're missing as the United States did as citizens when we're dealing with our veterans, and United States citizens when we think about Canada and Canadians. I think the lines of communication need to be open, and we thank you for having this opportunity to talk to you about the differences. They're just nuances. We're all humans, and we're all Americans, so I love it. So can you...
We are all one people. I think it was John F. Kennedy who said this: what history has united, let no one break asunder.
Exactly. Absolutely. And we'll be right back. You're listening to LA Miracle Cure.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
And you're listening to LA Miracle Cure. I'm your host. I'm here with Alan Wewak, and he is in Canada talking to me now over this wonderful internet quasi-faire. I don't even know what you want to say about it, but I tell you, we have come to a level of technology now that is just to be enjoyed, and we can speak to people around the world about anything. Isn't that so, Alan?
That's it. And we're talking about the best topic in the world, the legalization of cannabis and the better regulation of the product.
Absolutely. So now that we've kind of got a little bit of groundwork, and of course, you know, we here in Los Angeles would love to invite you to come out and visit us and meet some of the people that are making the laws here. And we'd love to hear what you're doing. I'd love to have you come out as a guest. I just want to say that on air so you feel free to come to Los Angeles so we can, you know, kind of pair up some of our great thinkers in this area to understand a little better about how to make this work best in it, internationally. Now, that brings us to the point of, okay, so I have a business in LA and I have a passport. And I'd like to go to Saskatchewan and open up a cultivation. What is the likelihood of me as a U.S. citizen coming and bringing my business to Canada?
Would you be bringing your person and becoming a Canadian citizen?
Oh, I would have to.
Because if the answer is yes, then there's no problem. We're a country built on immigration. We celebrated that we're all children of immigrants.
Okay.
And there wouldn't be a barrier there. Unfortunately, because of the federal illegality of cannabis in the United States, unfortunately, there would likely be some implications on you personally if you wanted to be an American citizen based in LA and be involved in this industry. Because even though you would be ascribing to every aspect of Canadian law, unfortunately, we found some circumstances where even American engineering firms that are not directly in any way involved in the cultivation of a plant other than selling products to a legal multi-billion dollar Canadian business, they're being given lifetime bans at the border. They're being punished in the United States. And that's unfortunate, but it's the world we live in.
Wait a minute. Did you say a lifetime ban?
No, you can't obviously ban. I should have been clear, forgive me, an American passport holder without stripping their passport. But Canadians are finding that. And there have been issues in Washington State where people have been turned back from the border.
Ah, okay. So there are international rules. I mean, there are, you know, I mean, if you want to go to Canada, I was just looking at Windsor the other day. What does it really take for me to come to Canada? Can I come with my driver's license and just drive in and tour, or do I have to have a passport and do I have to make...
It used to be that way both ways. I'm not entirely sure, and you'll forgive me for this. I know when I was a kid, and I grew up in Toronto, Ontario, city about the size of Chicago, but Canada's little New York, and it was a ritual every summer, going to Buffalo and going to Upper New York State and driving down the old station wagon with the wood paneling.
Yeah.
And all we would need is my father to take his license, his driver's license. And up into my adulthood, that was the requirement. All I needed to do was show government ID with my photo. Now, under, I believe, George W. Bush, and this was related to some broader security things that were going on at the time, that changed. And so when I go to the United States now, I have to bring my Canadian passport. I should know the answer to this, but as a Canadian, I somewhat selfishly only looked at what we need when we go south of the border. I'm not sure if you're required to bring a passport. I think it's always a good idea to have your passport with you, but I don't know if you need that or just a driver's license.
Yes, you have to have a passport, and I think if you are detained in any way, there are certain felonies in which Canadian law will turn American citizens around. You can't come if you have gun charges or drug charges. There's a few things that Canadians don't really mesh well with when it comes to United States citizens and some of our wrongdoing. So, but the point that I'm making here is this that when you look at business opportunities in cannabis, you're looking at empowering Canadian citizens, correct?
I'm looking to empower the world. We have 31 countries that have or are legalizing medicinal cannabis. My membership itself has got over $70 billion. I think it's around $50 billion in market capitalization.
Wow.
That's one country the size of California. The story and the help we can take around the world in regulating this product, harnessing the economic potential of it, and turning it towards a social good is immense. And I don't think that's just about helping Canada. I think that's about making the world a better place.
Absolutely.
And what makes cannabis so exciting and how it does that is where the investments are made. When I travel to see production facilities, and some of these are massive, of my members, I'm not going to downtown Toronto, which, as I said, is like our little New York, even though it's the size of Chicago. That's where all the corporate offices may be. But where the plants are small towns, usually in facilities that used to make like industrial products, whether that's an air compressor, an automobile part, or was a greenhouse. And a lot of those towns, just like in the United States, in Ohio and other places, those mid-sized communities and small communities, they all lost their economic anchor. One of the best stories that I can tell you about the miracle that is cannabis is a small community an hour outside of Ottawa, our nation's capital, called Smiths Falls. It was a town struggling, and it was struggling because a large recreational center owned by government was shut down, and the Hershey plant, just like Hershey, Pennsylvania, we had one up here, shut down after, I believe, 70 years, and it devastated this town. And a company that you may have heard of, called Canopy Growth Corporation, decided to lease a little tiny piece of that old Hershey plant originally. Little tiny piece. Town was struggling. They took a risk. And that has become the economic anchor. That small little corner has taken that entire Hershey plant over now, part of over 10 in Canada from that one company, and they've given life back to this town. And I sat in front of the Senate of Canada with the mayor of Smiths Falls right beside me, as he told his story of how Smiths Falls became better. And when they came in, didn't see crime, they saw less. They saw property values increasing. They saw young people moving to the town. They saw birth where before there was only death. And it started an economic miracle that has brought other manufacturers and other companies to that community. And I want to repeat that story around the world.
Wow, that is incredible. And you know what? We have dead cities too. We have an immense amount of dead cities. And with dead cities, and I don't mean that negatively, I just mean economically reversed cities because of the absence of opportunity. And so this is what is the story, I think, of cannabis that will really be the link. Let's talk a little bit about how do you see cannabis moving forward in terms of people who want to invest? Because now, you know, we all are on Facebook and social media, and we're all being given information about Canadian companies that we can invest in. And we're not even sure that these are true. However, because of the need for advertising, these social media companies jump on the bandwagon. Tell us, what really is happening when it comes to investing? Can U.S. citizen invest in a Canadian company? And how does that go about? Because maybe we want to get on board, but maybe we don't want to be physically involved. How does that work?
Well, I think everybody has to exercise a degree of caution. And I cannot, for legal reasons, comment on, you know, Americans investing or not. I would say for everyone, check your state law, check your securities regular, ask your broker, make sure it's above board. But in terms of selecting companies, the one thing I'd like to express to every listener of the show is do your research. Check out the fundamental. Check the laws. Check the regulations. Make sure what's being committed to is something that can be delivered on. Because there's some incredible wealth and opportunity being generated by the legal cannabis industry in Canada. But it also is exciting, and it's new. And sometimes people make mistakes, and sometimes, as much as, and this is not my membership, but this is the industry in general, sometimes overly optimistic perceptions and predictions can be made. In the, in the, the, beginning of a new industry. And I would encourage everybody that's looking at their life savings, whether you're a nurse, a bus driver, a doctor, a millionaire, or someone who's struggling to raise a couple of grand, do your research. Be cautious. And this is new. And until the numbers are in, do your research.
Well, I think that is very good caution. I want to go back to before we end our show, I want to go back a little bit to the differences between medicinal cannabis and its strength in terms of the THC and adult use version. You know, it's very important here in Los Angeles for people who are suffering to have a higher level of THC. I mean, we have regulations on how much we say it should be involved in, but the idea is that if you have a medical recreational card, that you are not charged a tax, or you can purchase more and at a higher gram amount. We find that that works best for those people who are struggling and who need this medicinally. Do you see that those amendments can be kind of nurtured as you, would you be looking forward to seeing LA law as to how to craft something for Canada, like let's say after the 17th of October?
It is a priority for us, and I wouldn't say we're modeling on any specific legislation. We're modeling on what we believe is ethical. And our prime minister, who's elected the majority government, one of his foundational promises was the legalization and better regulation of cannabis for recreational purposes. But he also promised fair access to medicines. And nobody is perfect. And governments, just like people, can make mistakes in policy. But the beauty of governments is they have the power of the pen so they can change them. And this is an issue we're going to be working on over the long term, because ultimately we believe collectively that medicinal cannabis should be zero rated. That means no excise tax, no provincial sales tax, no tax at all, just like any other medicine. That being said, we need to ensure the medicinal system is gated so that no one is abusing it. We have heard anecdotally, although we've seen no evidence of this, of people fibbing to get medicinal cannabis. We don't want to see that either. We need to get the system right, but we also believe that those people who are deserving, who are receiving benefit from medicinal cannabis, should not be paying a sin tax or any other form of taxation on cannabis. And that's where we want to go, and the government has the power to do that.
Okay, so let me ask you this. So as a citizen, I'm coming in, flying into, let's say, Whistler for the weekend. I'm going to a retreat. And of course, I'm going to do a little skiing and I'm going to hang out. And I brought my medicinal goods because I have a card.
I would strongly encourage you not to do that. Okay. There will be legal, even recreational uses, but there's too much risk to fly as an American.
Yes.
With cannabis in your possession, considering the federal laws. Coming to Canada, it's not ideal, right, if you're a medicinal user and there's a specific type, but there will be adult consumer use options for you.
Okay.
That being said, I need to reinforce to everyone that while cannabis is legal, will be legal in Canada, it's not the Wild West, and you're going to see an environment very different than Colorado. It will be very limited marketing and advertising. Stores will be subtle but warm and welcoming, and the online experience will be as well. You will be required to show that you're above the age of majority. So that depends on the province you're in. And just like wine or alcohol, you'll be able to consume. But I would strongly, strongly encourage any of your listeners to not bring medicinal cannabis to Canada through the airport, or think to take Canadian cannabis home. That would be illegal, and that can get you into an awful lot of trouble at the border. I don't want to see kids smoking cannabis. I don't want them to think that it's safe to drive after smoking cannabis or consuming cannabis. I don't want people to think that for non-medicinal uses, they should be consuming cannabis all day long while they're at work and operating heavy equipment. These are the things that normalization will end. Now, just as I plan to do, if I want to sit in my backyard or in my patio and enjoy cannabis, like most people enjoy a glass of wine, that's appropriate. I want to have some friends over and do a barbecue and do that. Of course, that's appropriate as well. But normalization is shifting this to responsible use, And we need to do that globally while also encouraging economic and social development.
Wow, that's very good. Well, you know, for our listeners, please give us your website and contact information for those who have further questions or would like to engage your national organization. Go ahead.
www.cann-cin.ca. We're updating our website right now, but you can find my contact information on that site, and we're here to help. So for any American company that want to come up into Canada and explore this marketplace, there will be a role in a year for edibles, but the only place of supply will be Canadian licensed producers. And if we as an association can help make those introductions, we're happy to grow this industry together.
Oh, that's wonderful to hear. That's wonderful to hear because here, edibles are a huge part of the market, a huge part of the market. I mean, we can really honestly say that the ingestion by the delivery system of smoking, I think it's kind of gone by the wayside. I think vaping, I think edibles, I think even taking it by pill form is really coming forward. So, you know, we at LA Miracle Cure, we want to thank you, Alan, for taking out the time to be a guest on our show today and to give us some real insight into how Canada sees this whole issue. And we're all working on our passports because we all want to come visit you, actually.
Well, Canada's a welcoming place, and despite the noise you see in the media about trade wars, we welcome every American.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, listen, everybody, you've been listening to LA Miracle Cure. I'm your host, Barbara. We are on America Out Loud.